You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Wednesday, March 13th, and the computer in Studio A says I can get 76 miles before I go to empty. So I'm going to go straight to Cartersville, but not straight home, because it's church night. So I wonder what's for dinner. We had ham. We had ham on Ash Wednesday. Brilliant. Anyway, looking forward to that and looking forward to giving you a full show on the Christian commute. Today's show topic, let's get to it. It's going to be, if I make it, ShepCon and WrestleMania. Shepherd's Conference and WrestleMania. I have a question in the inbox about the Amish. And, hold on, I'm going to slow down. I don't want to zip over the railroad tracks. Throws your wheels out of alignment if you zip over the railroad tracks. And today's scripture review, we're in Titus chapter 1, verses 7 through 9. Titus chapter 1, verses 7 through 9. We are continuing to talk about the qualifications for elders. So Paul goes on. He says, for the overseer, I'm going to stop right there. He was just talking about elders. He says, appoint elders in every city. And he says they have to be like this and they have to be like that. And then he gives some supporting reasons for an overseer. So here we see Paul switch from the use of the term presbyteros to the term episkopos to refer to the same office. So to say that an elder and a bishop are a separate office does not make sense. An elder and a separate office, or an elder and a bishop being a separate office, does not make sense. Now here, let's play the Episcopalian's advocate. The Episcopalian person says, of course, it's not. He'll say, but a bishop is still over a pastor. What they would argue is that a pastor, or what they'll call the priest sometimes, is the local church officer, whereas the denominational or higher church officer is the elder or bishop. But here we have overseer, episkopos. Ever wonder where we get the word Episcopalian or Episcopal? It's from this word, episkopos, all right? For the overseer must be above reproach as God's steward. Yesterday we talked about generally what it means to be above reproach. But here we see that Paul is essentially defining what it means to be above reproach. Remember we talked about yesterday being the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not being guilty of dissipation or rebellious. You remember that? All right. So, if you're someone who's prone to dissipation, you're not above reproach. If you're rebellious, you're not above reproach. If your family is not in good Christian order, you are not above reproach. All right, so Paul's saying an overseer must be above reproach as God's steward. He's mentioned this twice now. He has to be above reproach. These things. He has to be above reproach. We can take that to mean that these things mean that someone is not above reproach. Now, I don't necessarily think it's an exhaustive list, but it's a list of expectations. And Paul goes on to say, for God's steward must be above reproach and not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not addicted to wine. Now, in the Greek, this is one verb, one word. So there is, I don't know if it's a verb. I think it's a verb. There is one term in the Greek that we translate addicted to wine. So in English, we have a verb, addicted, and helping verb to. And then we have a noun, wine, addicted to wine. It takes three words. But in Greek, there's a term for someone like this. In English, we might call them a drunk. All right. So, hold on. Let me get around this white car. It's not from Florida. It's from Blount County, Tennessee. And they're out-of-staters driving slow. Me and a couple people are trying to pass them. So, not addicted to wine. There's a word that talks about somebody who has a propensity or problem with alcohol out there. Not addicted to wine, not pugnacious. Now, this is talking about fighting with the fists. It's not about somebody who's argumentative or difficult mentally. And by the way, people who are argumentative or difficult just in conversation or mentally, you might want to fight them, so they could be pugnacious too. But this is somebody, not somebody who's a brawler, not somebody who's going to fight. You insult them and they're going to haul off and punch you. By the way, people who are addicted to wine tend to be brawlers, don't they? Because they get drunk and they're going to get in a fight. And not fond of sordid gain. Notice this is not someone who's fond of gain, that's fine, but not fond of sordid gain, the wrong kind of gain, bamboozling people, or even taking advantage of one's position for gain. And in the modern megachurch world, there's all kinds of opportunity for sordid gain. So you don't want someone, whether it's in the modern megachurch world, quite frankly, you don't want a modern megachurch, or someone in the first century world who's fond of sordid gain. But here's how they should be. They don't need to be these things, but they need to be these other things, which are the opposite of these things. But hospitable, all right? A hospitable person is not quick-tempered and ready to beat you up, all right? And they have loving what is good. The opposite of loving sordid gain is loving what is good. Sensible, just, devout, and self-controlled. So people who are addicted to wine are not self-controlled. People who are self-willed can tend not to be hospitable. They certainly don't want to follow the will of God. They want to follow their own will. But we don't want someone who's self-willed. We want someone who's self-controlled. And Paul goes on to say, holding fast to the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching. So, well, why is this important? So that, here's why. So these are two things that an elder or an overseer has to be able to do. Two things that he has to be able to do or he's not qualified for his office. He has to have these skills, and these skills are essential to the function of that office. The elder and the overseer should be doing these things. And in order to do them, he has to be able to do them. And let me put this out there. It's not just that you have to be able to do them as an overseer. It's that you are to do them. In other words, you're not doing your job if you're not doing them. Think of it like this. If you're a policeman and you have arrest powers and you've been trained to use your billy club and your pistol and your, they all have the shocking, the stun guns and your stun gun. You're allowed to do this. If you see somebody out there breaking the law and being violent, if you're a cop, you're allowed to roll up on them, shoot them with a stun gun, and arrest them. Right? You're allowed to, but also you're expected to as part of protecting and serving. If you're a cop, you don't just roll up on some violent person going through the city punching people and going crazy and say, "Well, I ought to arrest that guy, but I don't want to fight him, so I'm just going to drive on." It's not how it works. You have this obligation to do it. So it's the same thing with an episcopos here. You don't get to not do these two things. Yeah, just in case I ever need to, I'm able. No, you need to do them. And you can't do them unless you're holding fast to the faithful word in accordance with the teaching. What are these two things? It's exhorting and refuting. So you can't exhort and you can't refute in sound doctrine, at least, unless you hold fast to the faithful word in accordance with the teaching. Right? So holding fast to the faithful word, which is in accordance with the teaching, so that he will be able to both exhort in sound doctrine. Now, Joe Osteen can exhort somebody, but not in sound doctrine. Exhort in sound doctrine and refute those who contradict. Contradict what? Sound doctrine. The faithful word. Teaching. So not only do you have to teach people the doctrine and exhort them to follow it, those who contradict biblical teaching, orthodox teaching, need to be contradicted. That is part of protecting the flock. You're protecting them from false teaching, and you're correcting the person who's in error. It's not a matter of, I'm going to choose what hill to die on. Every hill that has to do with sound doctrine is a hill to die on. And therein lies, how about this, the tricky part. Because if you're exhorting someone, yeah, people love to be exhorted by people who are hospitable and sensible and just and self-controlled. But what about when you're contradicting people? When you're contradicting people, or I should say refuting people, when you're refuting people who contradict sound doctrine, you don't all of a sudden have an excuse to turn on a switch and be pugnacious and quick-tempered. No, you have to look at the person who's contradicting sound doctrine. Remain in control. Don't lose your temper as being self-tempered. Don't haul off and fight him because you're pugnacious. All right? Don't look to capitalize on it for sordid gain, for that matter. But you got to sit back. Take a breath. The Bible doesn't say you have to take a breath. I say that. You have to take a breath and remain hospitable and sensible, and in self-control, go refute that person. This is not an easy task. It's easy to read it. Doing it's another thing. But that's what's expected of the pastor. That or the elder. That's the elder is the pastor. It doesn't say the word pastor here, but that's what's expected in the office. The ability to do this. And I guess the, not just like the aptitude, but the propensity and the will to do it. Because if you're devout, you'll do these things. It's one thing to just believe something, and then when it gets hard, you don't want to take action. But if you're devout, you're going to take the action. So let's move on to the inbox. SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. That's where you can send your questions about Christian theology or apologetics. SethDunn88@gmail.com. Or you can dial in the 470-315-0875. Yesterday's question came from the voicemail box. But today's question comes from the email inbox all the way from Missouri, and it's Lacey from Missouri. And she's asking me, Seth, do the Amish fall into the category of radical separationists? So, I mean, here's the thing. I'm going to talk about Amish people. I'm going to talk about their separation, and I'm going to talk about should we consider them biblical and orthodox? But I really can't answer this question on the Christian commute because now I've got a term to define, radical separationists. Well, who defines that? Is it in a theological dictionary somewhere? Is it in Webster somewhere? If you ask me if the Amish are separationists, I'll say yes. If you ask me if they're radical, I'll say yes. But also, if you ask me, a Baptist, are you radical? Heck yeah, I'm radical. I've read Radical by David Platt. I'm radical. I'm sold out for the gospel. I'm in the world, but not of it. Are you a separationist? Yeah, I'm separate. I'm holy. Be holy for I'm holy, God said. I'm God's holy people. I'm separate. I'm in the world, but not of it. I'm a radical separationist according to the world. All right, so I could define myself as that because that's just being a Christian, is being sold out for God in a radical way and separate from the world. But within religious circles and within society, you know, radical separationist, are you going to go live on a farm with no electricity and never run for governmental office? Okay, that's even more radical than Seth the Southern Baptist. So yeah, just by the plain meaning of the words, yes, they're radical separationists. All right, so Amish people come from the Anabaptist movement. And academics like to argue whether or not Anabaptists are Protestants. Right? I think they are. So if you want to trace them to a reformer, Anabaptist, and Amish people are Anabaptists, all right? So you go back to Amish and Anabaptists, and you want to trace the Anabaptists back to the Swiss Brethren, and you trace the Swiss Brethren back to the reformer Ulrich Zwingli of Switzerland. So the Reformation started. It wasn't just Martin Luther. You've got Calvin and Zwingli coming along. And these guys that were studying under Zwingli, the Swiss Brethren, they came to the realization, oh, we're not supposed to sprinkle babies and call it baptism. Professed believers are supposed to be dunked in the water by immersion. That's baptism. That's why they're called Anabaptists, because they thought they were against baptism. They're not against baptism. They're for doing it right. And out of that stream, which, by the way, was super controversial, and the rest of the like Lutherans, they didn't like that. They didn't like people who didn't want to sprinkle the babies. It was a big deal. And out of that movement comes the Anabaptists. And you have to remember, at this time, the church and state is all wrapped up together. Catholic or not, church and state is wrapped up. And these people, they said, we want to be separate from it. So you're an Anabaptist generally is somebody, not only do they want to baptize somebody, they don't want to run for office. We don't want to have any part of being the civil magistrate. We're separate. And they even get into pacifism. We don't want to fight in wars. So if you're looking at Mennonites, people get Mennonites and Amish people mixed up because they dress similar and they won't fight in wars. They're from the Anabaptist movement. They're pacifists. So if you look at Amish people, and you have the other Anabaptists, they're not into running for office, they don't vote, they actually don't pay Social Security taxes. They're allowed to do that as a religious exemption. Any Anabaptist is, by the way, because it's a form of insurance that they reject. And it's all wrapped up in the government. They're also exempt from military service as pacifists. Well, they're exempt from combat service. I used to work for a guy who was a Marine, and I made mention of this. He's like, well, let's see who they call when the enemy comes. It's like, I guess the Marines. But in the United States, you may have heard of the Pennsylvania Dutch. Amish people come from a Dutch background. They speak like this English. They have a strange and funny accent, and they have some words of German origin, like Rumspringa, or Dutch origin. And generally speaking, they don't have cars. Their clothes are very plain. They don't want buttons because buttons are too flashy. Their shirts have hooks instead of buttons. They generally shy away from technology. Now, if it's for work, if it's something industrial, they'll have the technology. And it's kind of funny. They're not out there like cavemen, like banging rocks on sticks. Because, by the way, a caveman who bangs a rock on a stick and sharpens the stick, that's technology. He made that. So Amish people tend to shy away from technology, but it's usually electronics or automotive. And they're not totally against it. They'll use it if they need it for industry. So they are, yes, radical separationists, because they're of that Anabaptist strain where they want to be off to themselves and not be involved with the government or involved with the world. And here's where you have to be careful, because if you look at them, you might think, oh, well, they're strange, but they're Orthodox. I mean, they believe in the Trinity. They believe in salvation by grace through faith. I mean, they're Anabaptist, right? So they're Orthodox. They're just a little weird. They're not a cult or anything. Well, generally speaking, they don't believe in the perseverance of the saints. But hey, neither do Methodists. But here's the deal. They don't believe in perseverance of the saints for people who aren't doing all the Amish stuff. Because there's, you know, what is it? The book of James says, keep yourself unstained by the world. So if you're driving a car, you're stained by the world. Now you've lost your salvation because you're stained by the world because you're driving a car or because you have a laptop. You see where that gets at? It's not that they have an Arminian view of salvation. It's that how you go about losing your salvation. It's one thing, well, I just stopped believing. It's another thing that, oh, I drove in a car. So the thing with Amish life is they will separate from the people who don't want to live like they're Amish. They'll shun their family members and community members. And by the way, they can't be separate and live that sort of lifestyle unless they do it. You can't maintain that without that level of shunning. And we know that you're supposed to shun people in church if they continue in sin and won't repent. But it gets to be like, don't tell me I'm in sin because I have buttons on my shirt. So when you get into legalism, real legalism, not fake legalism that people talk about, how dare you say I can't go get drunk in the bar, you legalist. No, real legalism. When you get into real legalism, you get into some very repressive and oppressive form of Christianity that people just freak out under. In fact, pretty much all their young people freak out. They have something called the Rumspringa, where they've lived their super strict lives, and they basically let them run wild for 2 years and drive cars and do drugs and drink because they go wild. And then after that, they have to make a decision. Do they want to stop going wild and be Amish or leave the community? They call that the Rumspringa. There's an old documentary about it. It's called Devil's Playground. And I think Rumspringa means running around or something like that. And people hear about that who've never heard about it before, and they say, oh, it makes sense. They've been repressing themselves. Remember I talked about, what was it? The day, was it yesterday or the day before yesterday? I talked about focusing on one doctrine and being super extreme about that and how that's unhealthy and how that can drive you towards being a cult. Well, the flat earther who's obsessed with the earth being flat. Well, Amish people are obsessed with separation. Oh, James says keep yourself unstained by the world, and all of a sudden that means you don't have electricity or cars or buttons. And you have to live in a farm commune. You've taken something good, living in a farm commune with other Christians, and turned it into something bad because of your hyper-separationism or your hyper-focus on one doctrine. So yes, Lacey, I would classify the Amish, based on what I've said, as radical separationists. And I would advise anybody involved in the Amish movement to get out of it and get in a normal church that believes in perseverance of the saints and get some buttons. They don't all have to be showy.
I've got buttons on my shirt. I don't think they're showy.
That's just me. So, am I going to go as far as to call the Amish a cult? In as much as they multiply salvation requirements, yes. So if they have to maintain their salvation by living an Amish lifestyle, then it's a cult. So any Amish person or Amish group who believes that you have to maintain your salvation by doing good works and by not driving cars and using modern technology, if you lose your salvation for doing a Google search, I think you're in a cult, because then you've multiplied a salvation requirement and you've become a Judaizer. But, you know, you have to ask individual people about that. So I know you weren't asking me if they were a cult, Lacey. You were just asking me if they're radical separationists. So interesting question about the Amish. Let's move on to the show topic, Shep Con and WrestleMania. Shep Con and WrestleMania. All right, so do you guys know what WrestleMania is? It's the first big wrestling show ever conceived. It was conceived by the WWF, and it was conceived in the twilight of the territory days. So I'm going somewhere with this. So just humor me and listen. About 30 years ago, professional wrestling was broken off into territories. So you had Vince McMahon Sr. and his territory was the New York territory, Connecticut, that area. That was the WWF, Worldwide Wrestling Federation at that time. And then you had the Calgary Stampede, and that was the Calgary, Alberta, Canada wrestling territory. And that's Stu Hart, Bret Hart's dad, Owen Hart's dad. That was a territory. And then you had Jim Crockett Promotions. And that was a southeastern territory. That's like North Carolina and Georgia. That's where Ric Flair got famous. You had the Florida Territory. Is Eddie Graham? Was that the name of the guy? The Graham Territory. Then you had the Memphis Territory. Jerry Lawler, that would have been his territory. I'm talking about the promoters who owned the wrestling promotions. You had Smoky Mountain Wrestling in East Tennessee. You had World Class Championship Wrestling in Texas. That would have been the Fritz Von Erich. So each one of these territories had its own promotion, and they had their own championship. So nowadays you have the World Wrestling Federation champion. That's the big wrestling champion. But in the territory days, you had multiple territories and multiple champions. And then the NWA got together in an alliance, it's kind of an alliance, and they'd say, all right, who's going to be the NWA champion? And Ric Flair, for example. And they said, all right, Ric Flair, you're Jim Crockett's guy, but he's going to loan you to other territories to go defend your championship. And then the people would share wrestlers from different territories. Like the Freebirds, they were from the Texas territory. But like Dynamite Kid and Bret Hart, that's the Calgary territory. But you can only do the same match and the same show and the same moves in your territory over and over so many times. It's a show. It's like a circus or a comedy tour. They're telling the same jokes. They're doing the same tricks with tigers and elephants. So you'd get out of your territory. And you didn't want to be at war with members of other geographic territories because then you couldn't share their guys. Right, that was the territory days. The territory days are gone. Basically, Vince McMahon owns everything. He owns, used to be, it got into, they all merged into WCW and WWF, and now it's just WWF or WWE. But that's how the territories worked. And people would go to the shows in the territories, and they'd be fans of wrestlers from a certain territory. So Stu Hart could turn out wrestling fans to say, watch WrestleMania in Vince McMahon's territory from Calgary. Right, and Jim Crockett could turn out wrestling fans from Georgia Championship Wrestling to Vince McMahon's territory if they wanted to watch WrestleMania. You get what I'm saying? All right, now, how does this work with the Christian industrial complex? Think about evangelists. There's evangelists, they have territory, or theologians, they have territory. Like, this guy's an evangelist in Texas, this guy's an evangelist in Georgia, but he tells the same sermons all over Georgia. But he's got connections in Texas, and the guy who tells the same sermons all over Texas, he'll bring him in and switch. It works like this with conferences. All right, so if you want to look at territories, Al Mohler has a territory. It's Louisville, it's Kentucky. So he's the Calvinist Baptist guy in that area. All right, and then you got Ligon Duncan. Well, he's a Calvinist Baptist guy, but he's Presbyterian, so he's bringing something to the table. Then you got Steve Lawson and Vody Bachum, and you got all these people who are popular in a certain segment, and where do they go? They go to Shepherd's Conference every year. They go to Shepherd's Conference. Mark Deaver, he's got the Nine Marks territory in Washington, D.C. And if you're, grace to you, if you're John MacArthur and Phil Johnson and that outfit, you want to be friends with these guys, because you can go to their conferences and they can go to yours. How do you think Together for the Gospel got started? How do you think the Gospel Coalition got started? It's basically WWF. It's merging the territories and making sure everybody gets a piece of the pie. And who are they selling things to? The Marks. That's what wrestling fans used to be called, Marks. And the people who go to all these conferences, like ShepCon, they're marks for John MacArthur. They want to go hear John MacArthur this year. They're going to travel from all over creation, Montana, Iowa, Texas, New Mexico, Florida, because it's ShepCon. ShepCon is the WrestleMania of conservative Reformed Christianity. All the biggest names are there. All the stars from the territory. Just how WrestleMania is going to have Hulk Hogan and John Cena and Andre the Giant and Triple H and Sting. Whoever is the most famous, biggest guy, the biggest matches are going to go down at WrestleMania. And whoever is the most famous, big-time guy, he's going to speak at Shepherd's Conference. So you may have seen on the internet, Al Mohler and Phil Johnson kind of got into a little spat or a little argument. You might say, that Phil Johnson shot on Al Mohler, to use a wrestling term. And I'll get to that. But that video is being taken off the internet and stuff like that. But here's the thing. They're all buddies, right? They're all friends with John MacArthur. That's why they're there. He's getting his friends together for a conference, and he's selling tickets to the marks who want to go see these guys. And he knows, even if they weren't his friends, even if Al Mohler wasn't John MacArthur's friend, and even if Ligon Duncan wasn't John MacArthur's friend, he'd still want them at his conference because they draw money. So if Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair don't like each other in real life personally, they know that they draw money and they're going to want to do business together. And in the wrestling world, what you can do is, whether you like each other or not, you can pretend that you don't like each other because it's all a show. What makes people want to come to WrestleMania is two guys, they've been feuding, and there's what they call the build. They've been building up, and these guys are going to cope, they blow it off. That's what they call blow it off. So WrestleMania 3 is the big one. Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. And they started feuding, these two big megastars. Now, in real life, Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan are friends. But there's a fake feud. And the blow-off is going to happen after the build. They're going to WrestleMania to sell tickets. Boom. But in real life, in the background, they're buddies. Okay? So, it's the same way at the preaching conference, at the Shepherd's Conference. In the background, everybody's a buddy. But no one's going to the preaching conference to hear them jostle at one another. Usually at these preaching conferences, they'll jostle at the heretics who weren't there. They're not going to jostle at each other because then you'll lose the marks that person brings. And let me tell you, it's a show that friends put on across regions to make money. That's what Shepherd's Conference is. Whether you're edified by the preaching or not, they've got a bookstore. They set up a bookstore and they sell Karen Swallow Pryor and Jackie Hill Perry books. Do you think John MacArthur reads that crap? I doubt it. I know Phil Johnson probably doesn't read that. But they know that there's somebody who wants to come and buy those kind of books. The people in Mark Deaver's territory, they read Jackie Hill Perry. And it's a pop-up shop. It's a pop-up store. When you go to WrestleMania, pop-up stores everywhere selling John Cena t-shirts. They're there to sell merch. They have a conference. They have headliners and they sell merch. Are you following me? Are you following me on the parallels? And I'm not saying anything's wrong with WrestleMania. I'm just saying, do you notice that's what ShepCon is? It's the WrestleMania of the Reformed Baptist Conservative Christian world. And they invite Presbyterians because apparently it's not about being Baptist, it's about being quote unquote Reformed. They wouldn't have done that in Zwingli's day, I know that. So, hold on, let me stop at this red light. So in wrestling, there's a term called a shoot. And it basically means a real fight. You shoot on somebody. Or you start telling the truth, because everything's staged. All the speeches of people pretending to be mad and pretending to start a fight, it's all fake. And then the fight, the guys slamming each other and hitting each other are fake. But every once in a while, somebody goes off script and they do a shoot. They'll do a shoot promo or a shoot interview. They're out of character. They've broken character. They're telling the truth. Or they get mad at somebody in the ring because somebody is stiff and they're really hitting them or they just don't like them. So instead of fake slamming them and fake punching them, they really punch them and really slam them. The audience doesn't know the difference. It's called a shoot. It's a real fight. And all I can think to explain the interaction, the very controversial interaction between Phil Johnson and Al Mohler is a shoot. They're sitting on stage. Every year, it's these guys lobbing softballs to one another. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? Tell us, oh, John MacArthur's friends, from your great wisdom, how do you think the church should handle this? On all the problem people who aren't there, because we'd never invite them. Softball, 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 softball. And all their marks are, oh, wow, not only do I'm a mark for Al Mohler, not only do I get to hear Mohler, but now I get to hear Deaver and Duncan and all these guys and all their wisdom. I'm here to hear these guys be wise. And all of a sudden, Phil Johnson, he shoots on Al Mohler. He says, Al Mohler, you know, don't you think social justice is this big problem? And, you know, you didn't sign the social justice statement. What's the deal with that? This is not a part of the show. The Marks did not come to hear their hero, Al Mohler, have to answer for the social justice problems in the SBC. The Marks did not come to the show to see, hear James Riad, or to hear Ligon Duncan get challenged about why is foreign money from James Riady, a big Clinton supporter, coming into your seminary. They didn't come to hear things like that. They came for the stage show of the softballs. And Al Mohler came to give that. You can tell by his reaction. And he gets all torqued out of shape. Well, I'm not going to argue, but I'm not going to do it. Blah, blah, blah. And then John MacArthur is like, well, I'm not going to argue with my friends. Guys, if you don't think that these big conferences are staged to get your money, and that money will, I'm not going to call it sordid gain, that money will influence who you invite. And it's really hard to, from what I've researched now, to put a lot of social justice evidence. Like if I was a cop trying to arrest somebody and like make a case on them, I don't think I could arrest Al Mohler and Ligon Duncan and Mark Deaver for the crimes of social justice yet. But they'd be prime suspects. You could definitely arrest Danny Akin for the crime of social justice, if you'll follow me. And people were disappointed when they saw John MacArthur and Phil Johnson, who signed the social justice statement, invite the same old guys who wouldn't sign the social justice statement, I'm talking about the Dallas statement, to the ShepCon. I wasn't, because I know WrestleMania needs superstars to sell tickets. And I know that's what it's about. And I know they want to draw marks. Listen, don't be a mark for some evangelical celebrity. I almost want to be a mark for Phil Johnson because he actually shot on Al Mohler. But what I want to tell you is that we seem to have this separation in our minds, like we should, between the Benny Hinn's and the Todd White's and the Kenneth Copeland's of the world. And their conferences is full of charlatanry and greed because they're heretics. And when someone like Francis Chan goes to the conference, well, now he's a heretic too. But we have a separation in our mind. Like, oh, we got all these very sound Orthodox guys like Al Mohler and Ligon Duncan and John MacArthur, and they're having a conference, and it's different. Now, they did their conference the same reason Kenneth Copeland did to make his conference, to make money. The difference is these guys over here aren't heretics, and these guys over here are. But what do you do when, and I'm not calling Al Mohler a heretic, it's one of the things, is like, he's into social justice, isn't he? Is he or isn't he? What do you do with someone like H.B. Charles or Mark Deaver, and you think, these guys will draw, and they're website orthodox, but what they're doing is bad. Why should I invite them? Let me tell you something. Vince McMahon, he'll let anybody come work. Like, Jimmy Snuka, like, was supposed to beat a woman to death. He kept working for Vince McMahon. You got people on roids. You got people on drugs. If they draw, they work. And people are, oh, I'm shocked that John MacArthur would do this. Why? Do you think he's not trying to draw money? Just because he's teaching good things doesn't mean he's not trying to draw money. And when you sit back and you stop thinking of these conferences as like God is in the conference and this is the gathering of God's people at the conference. Why? Because the Gettys are there playing worship music? Listen, people are there to worship God at Grace Community Church on Sunday morning when the church services are happening. When they have a conference that they sold tickets to and they had a bookshop, you're at WrestleMania. So stop being a mark. And if you stop being a mark, you'll stop being so upset about all this social justice stuff that's infiltrating your conferences. And maybe you'll start being upset about the social justice stuff that could be infiltrating your church. Don't be a mark. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved. Keep your questions coming to SethDunn88@gmail.com, the Christian Commute inbox, and I will be back with you again Thursday if the Lord tarries and I stay healthy, etc., etc., with another episode of the Christian Commute.
Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to SethDunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.